Hello, everyone. Lee Arnold welcoming you to our weekly visit with Country Music Conversations. This week, a visit with the late Earl Thomas Conley. But before we start this conversation, here are a few words from our sponsor. Country Music Conversations with Lee Arnold's podcast is made possible by our sponsor, MarketSmith, Inc., the digital media agency that's been growing brands like Tumi, SharkNinja, New Jersey Lottery, PSE&G, Blue Mercury Cosmetics, and Dick's Sporting Goods. You know what makes this agency so good at what they do? Because simply being a marketing agency is no longer enough. Solution-based, problem-solving, and ever-evolving, they create enduring value for DTC and B2B brands by opening up and growing marketing channels. Their patented AI offerings, informed by human intelligence, allow them to act with agility and intellect. I was speaking with the CEO not too long ago, and she was saying they take on clients who know who they are, who want to grow, and clients that know what they want. These big brands choose MarketSmith because they want to merge with a partner who'll make them exceptional and an agency that will grow their revenue. Digital marketing is not easy, but MarketSmith, Inc. knows when to make the media dollars work hard for their clients. You have a brand you want to grow? Well, contact MarketSmith.com and tell them Lee Arnold sent you. Earl was a standout as both a singer and songwriter. Between 1980 and 2003, he recorded 10 studio albums. He charted more than 30 singles on the Billboard country charts, 18 of which reached number one. Earl was born in Portsmouth, Ohio. When he was 14, his dad lost his job with the railroad, and he moved in with his older sister. He had talent, both as a sculptor and a caricaturist. He joined the Army and became a member of a Christian trio, where his musical talent as a vocalist and songwriter were discovered. He was influenced by George Jones and also Merle Haggard. After leaving the Army, Earl began commuting to Nashville, where he met Dick Hurd, who produced Mel Street. Earl wrote Mel's first hit called Smoky Mountain Memories. Earl worked day jobs, and he played the clubs at night. But he felt he wasn't making progress, so he moved to Huntsville, Alabama, where he met producer Nelson Larkin, who got him signed to GRT Records. He had four singles, none of which became a hit. However, as a songwriter, he was having hits with Conway Twitty and Mel Street. He then returned to Nashville, where he signed with Warner Brothers Records and had one top 10 hit. He left the label and went with Sunbird Records, where he had a number one hit with Fire and Smoke. He then signed with RCA, where his career really took off. He used his three given names because at the time, he was mistakenly compared to John Conley and Con Hunley. His number one hit, Holding Her and Loving You, got him several Grammy Awards. In 1984, he set a record for having four number one singles in a row. He went on to a successful duet career with Anita Pointer, Emmylou Harris, and Keith Whitley. ETC had the distinction of being the only country artist to appear on Soul Train with his duet with Anita Pointer of Too Many Times. Although being successful as a solo songwriter, at the end of the 80s, he teamed up with Randy Scraggs, with whom he wrote several number one hits. His record sales started to drop in the 90s, as country took a more progressive turn. His label dropped him in 1992, and Earl took a seven-year recording hiatus due to several factors, including vocal problems, record company politics, fatigue, and even mental burnout. In 2002, Blake Shelton had a hit with Earl's All Over Me, which he co-wrote with Blake Mevis and his longtime friend, Michael Pyle. However, tragedy struck when Earl suddenly passed away on April 10, 2019, from cerebral atrophy. He was only 77. I had the honor, through the years, to have several conversations with ETC. He was warm, bright, and articulate. The conversation we'll be listening to was after a performance in his native Ohio, in which he shared memories of the loss of his father and sister, the songs he felt comfortable singing, and the song that he wrote that surprised him that went to number one. Here now is Earl Thomas Conley.
I get a feeling of deja vu right now as I sit here in Nashville during a convention week at the Country Music Association celebration. My mind goes back to a time when about four and a half years ago, I was sitting right across from Earl Thomas Conley, only it was a change of venue. It was New York City. It was backstage in Madison Square Garden, the Felt Forum. And you were part of a show which included some of the biggest names in country music, for the Stetson folks, people like Charlie Pride and Larry Gatlin and Janie Fricke. And at that time, Earl Thomas Conley had not achieved the stardom that he has today. What a difference 4 years makes.
Yeah, at that particular time, I was learning what it was like to be on the road. I was on the road constantly with Charlie Pride and just learning the ropes. But it's worked out all right.
It's been a pretty good 4 years.
Yeah, I've learned an awful lot.
Earl, I guess you have accomplished something which would be the envy of anybody who's in music, not only country music, but any form of music. Having achieved four number one consecutive singles, that is just an incredible feat, just to even think about it.
Yeah, it's still pretty hard for me to relate to that. I knew that it hadn't been done in country music, but I didn't realize that it hadn't been done in any form of music. So I'm still trying to get used to that. But it's been a pleasant thing to deal with. RCA's been pretty good to me. It's hard to get that much consistency going, unless you got a real good team, but it's working out just fine. I'm proud of it.
If there's anything that artists strive for, it's recognition, and that comes in several ways, in the form of the fans coming to your shows and your record sales and your popularity, and of course the final moment, I guess, of tribute by the peers is when you receive awards. You have been nominated for several in the past couple of years, and that golden ring, or the brass ring, has more or less eluded you, so to speak, and much to the surprise and chagrin of, I guess, every country music fan out there, because I guess no more deservedly deserved the awards than you have because of your accomplishments. How does that affect you?
Well, it doesn't. I really don't focus my music towards that. I think a lot of the awards go to traditional artists, and I'm a little bit more of a variety. There's times when I'm right in the mainstream, and then there's times when I'm a little outside that edge, and I go in extremes. And I prefer, as long as I'm not offending my audience and so forth, and the radio people and so forth, we've been getting along just fine, to be able to experiment a little bit back and forth and entertain myself and have a lot of variety in my music, because lately I've geared most of my music towards the road show. Because I've never focused on that before. For the past 4 years, I've been touring. I started out with Charlie Pride. I got my band together, and I've been with Hank Jr. for the past year and a half. And those are extreme influences in each direction. Charlie was more conservative. Hank Jr. is more rowdy. And it's helped me to understand what I need to do with my show on the road as far as those two extremes. So my music's a reflection of that. And it's all safely involved with country music.
Mm-hmm. Speaking about country music, some of your great hits, let's kind of reminisce. The current favorite is called Chance of Loving You from your brand new album. Very interesting song.
Yeah, it's got a little bit different beat and a little different arrangement from what I'm used to, and it sounds a little different than some of the other things on radio, but I think it's real refreshing. It's one of the first songs that Randy Scruggs and myself wrote back in January. And other than just having that little clever rhythm thing to it and the guitars, it's just a regular crafty song.
One of the other great hits, which was included in that foursome of the four consecutive number one singles, was probably one of the most interesting ballads as far as a country song is concerned, called Holding Her and Loving You. The lyric content of that describes probably every conceivable love song that's been written in country music.
Yeah, Tommy Brassfield and Walter Aldridge from Muscle Shoals, Alabama, wrote that song, and I've been knowing those boys since 5, and that's the first song that they'd pitched me because they knew that I was writing most of my stuff. But if I had 10 of those songs each year, that caliber, I would probably quit writing myself because I wouldn't have to worry about it. But unfortunately, those don't come along very often. We had about probably 1,500 songs pitched to us this year and were lucky to get one like that. I'll continue to write myself, but I can't turn down a song like that. That was wonderful, and it's been a real good shot in the arm for my career.
Writing is kind of an interesting process. It's a very difficult process as an artist. I mean, being a performer and then also being a songwriter, because actually your career started as a songwriter, writing hits for other people, including Conway Twitty here in Nashville, and you struggled with that for a long time before you're recognized as someone who could be an artist in their own right, singing their hits. Does that pose kind of a double problem for you, judging someone else's material against something that you might have written yourself?
No, it really doesn't. I got my own foundation established, and I'll continue to write because I need that base, and I need that to be able to identify with the common man and the regular commercial market through myself. But at the same time, rather than get too inside and write too much songwriter for songwriter type songs, I cut one per album that's outside to give myself a different perspective. And I enjoy it. We cut Heavenly Bodies. A couple of girls from New York, Long Island, wrote that song. And a lot of people thought I was betraying my own songwriting style. And I said, look, I got to make some adjustments here as far as being commercial goes. I want to see what happens when I do this. And it worked out real well. That was a good song for my career. It didn't go to number one, but it was top 10, and I still get tons of requests for it on my road show. So,
what kind of feeling does that evoke when you're around the room of the ladies?
They love it. The guys like it, too. They get into, everybody gets into Heavenly Bodies, I guess.
In one form or another. You have a new song, too, that came from that new motion picture called River Rat, called Wherever You Are.
Mm-hmm. There's a highlight in the film where the father has been away from the daughter for a number of years and actually never had the opportunity to really know each other. So this is a get acquainted type scene in there. I think they're dancing where he's singing to his little girl. And if you didn't see the film or anything, you would think that this guy or me, I'm singing to a lover or something, but it's just a beautiful part of the film. And I really enjoyed singing the song. Mike Post, and I can't remember the other guy's name right now that wrote the song, but I was supposed to have gone out there and spent 2 or 3 days writing with Mike Post for the movie and didn't have the opportunity. I had another commitment to fulfill. So they sent me a song to sing, and I was a little bit leery about doing that because I didn't want to distract myself from the album that I just completed, my own album. And I got into it, and I was able to combine the old traditional side of myself with this new contemporary side, and it kind of put me back together. I really enjoyed doing it.
What kind of other things in the new album kind of excite you that you would like to see, perhaps, as a new single, besides your current favorite?
On the new album?
Yeah.
There's a song called Honor Bound that's got the Jim Horn, who played saxophone on.
He also Don Williams sang?
Yeah.
He also played on Don Williams' That's the Thing About Love, right?
He plays quite a bit of horn around town here now, and he's spent an awful lot of time in L.A., and he played on such songs as Little Genie by Elton John and Year of the Cat for Al Stewart, and he's just a tremendous horn player. And the song is it's called Honor Bound, and I expect big things out of it, and I don't know if it's going to be the next single or what, but I'm sure it will be a single off the album.
What do you strive for in an album? Is there any, it used to be that when artists went in the studio, they'd record a couple of songs they felt would be a hit, and the rest was just filler material, either old standards or songs that have been done by other people recently or cover records.
Well, one thing, if I'm writing a waltz song, I try to make it the best, most appropriate at the time song that I can write, and I purposely go from that attitude over into a real up-tempo thing, and I try to do the same thing with it. So the albums usually have a lot of variety, and I've entertained myself and hopefully will have entertained the audience enough to where they'll buy the records. And the radio people, I try to keep them in mind so that everything is totally compatible. And so far it's been just fine.
Where would you like to see your career go from here? What's missing at this point?
I'm still about halfway up to the top. I feel like I'm just beginning, actually. there's an awful lot of room for improvement as far as getting things more organized on the road. And gosh, I guess that never ends. It's like a unending school trip life is, I guess. And as long as a person can maintain the intensity and the desire and keep their heart in the right place and not take this business for granted, I think you can stay here as long as you want.
Do you still get involved in another area? You're a very artistic person, not only as a performer and a songwriter, but then one time I understand you were a sculptor and a cartoonist.
I really don't have time for that, so I've put all of that energy and all of that art and visualization and so forth in my lyrics and in my songs, and now, of course, we have video, so it gets you get the best of all worlds. The mini movies and the audio portions of things. So I'm painting in songs, hopefully now.
How do you feel about videos? Do you enjoy that media?
Yeah, I get the chance to go out there and act crazy or whatever. The opportunity to do some light acting, smiling, grinning, making faces, and watching these things come down. It's real interesting. There's one kind of a negative that I don't focus on too much, but it kind of takes the imagination away from the people, and it does me too sometimes. If the person who's writing the script for the video has gone totally away from the idea that I had in mind, then I turn them down. So videos have done for me, they have cleared up the confusion between myself, John Conley, and Con Hunley. And people have been able to see me singing this song, this particular, whatever the song might be, and be able to relate me to my music, and it's really helped me tremendously in that respect.
There was an identity problem there, wasn't there, between Earl Thomas Conley, John Conley, and Con Hunley.
I was beginning to wonder who I was myself. I had one woman here last year, and this only happened once, and she came up with a John Conley album and was looking me right in the eye and wanted me to sign John Conley's album. So I says, John hopes you enjoy this, Earl Thomas Conley, and I signed it.
That's a great story. What's the hardest song you ever had to write?
The hardest one? The hardest period of time that I've gone through was back when Crowd Around the Corner was going on, because I didn't have a label. I had to create a bunch of songs to get myself on a label, and I had about 17 songs accumulated, and that was one of the salvation songs. You're as low as you can go was in that period of time. Crowd Around the Corner, like Cinderella. I was writing an awful lot of philosophical songs, but I was feeling an awful lot of what in the world am I going to do with my life? What's going to happen? I'm going to have to create my way out of this depression. So Crowd Around the Corner and You're As Low As You Can Go, all those songs represent a high point in my career, even though I was totally depressed. And I don't really like to go in there and get all brokenhearted and depressed to have to write, but that was just a 2 or 3 year period right there where I certainly did come to surface as far as a songwriter and an artist who could sing a whole new style. It helped me develop a style during that period. But there hasn't been since then anything that, other than just the craft and going along with the job that I've created for myself.
What you're really saying is it was a form of therapy.
Yeah, and it still is. Each year we go through there, we gather up and are able to come to the surface with past experiences that we might have experienced over the year before, or all of the 42 years before. But I get the feeling of fulfilling myself when I write. And since I've been writing with Randy Scruggs, it's just like when he's sitting across there, it's the immediate counterpart to all the things that I'm weak at and missing in my life. And I do vice versa for him, because he's a tremendous guitar player and an instrumentationalist. He's excellent in the studio and has had this great long line of bluegrass influence, of country influence, light rock and roll, folk music. Gosh, he's had all of the missing things as far as instrumentation goes and production goes that I was weak at. And then I offer him the lyrics and my subtle melodies and so forth. So the combination of the two of us has just turned into something that's quite an inspiration for me and him too.
Are you happy with what Nashville is today as opposed to when you first came to this town, as far as the opportunities for those who are following in your footsteps, the young and the undiscovered?
I have to be more happy now because I'm a part of it now. Back then, I was beating down every door there was trying to get into this business. And at that time, I didn't know that you had to create your way into it because I was always looking for somebody who could help me. Well, you have to help yourself. And out of your own energy does all these things happen. And that's the only way you can do it. Nobody can save you but yourself.
Earl, I want to thank you for stopping by today on Country Road. It's delighted to see you. Much luck and maybe four more consecutive number ones.
I love you, and I sure do appreciate your support over the years, and looking forward to this new album project and what might happen with it.
And there's our conversation with one of the greats, Earl Thomas Conley. Join me next week when our guest will be Carlene Carter. Until then, Lee Arnold reminding you to stay safe and keep it country.